Greetings from Western Pennsylvania. You're headed our way next month for Cindy's Stock, kind of a Woodstock-themed event, and you'll be showcasing great photos you've done, album covers. You were the Woodstock photographer, so that's going to be a cool thing. What's that experience like for you to revisit that and talk about it to spectators?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll be at Woodstock the week before doing a big thing there at the Bethel Museum at the old Woodstock Festival site. And then this will be my fourth time going to Cindy's Stock in Pittsburgh, and I'm happy to help with her cancer fund. It's the Yates Cancer and Hope Fund, and it's my fourth time going. It's her 23rd year though coming up.
About that.
And so I love it when my pictures can help people, really. So I give her pictures. Rock and Roll at the Doors, Joni Mitchell, CSN, Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock, and she has auctions, silent auctions at her Cindy's Stock event, which is coming up in end of August, August 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So I'll be there, and she has great music groups playing every day, and it's a great fun event. I love going there.
There's a female-oriented Crosby, Stills, and Nash tribute band. That's going to be very interesting. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, some of those tribute bands are darn good, It should be really, really interesting.
Well, I want to talk some history with you about Woodstock, about Hendrix, McCartney, all the famous legends you've taken photos. But I wanted to start with a modern question, too. What's it like for you when you're at a concert these days and you see everyone in the crowd pulls out their phones and they're snapping photographs? Does that amuse you? Does that annoy you? Does that make you proud?
Yeah. No, it doesn't annoy me. I mean, everyone should be able to take pictures of whatever they want, I mean, I do. It depends on where you are, Anyone can take a picture, but, I mean, if you can be in the Eagles dressing room when you take the picture, then you're going to get something pretty special, But if you're in a concert, I mean, everybody wants to remember what they saw, and I think it's great. I love going to concerts because I was a musician for years before I picked up a camera, and music is my life. I love seeing. I just went and saw Widespread Panic 3 nights ago here in L.A., and the place was packed, sold out for 3 nights. Everybody boogieing like crazy. I like that atmosphere. And sure, everyone had their phones out, remembering the great evening they had. Yeah.
Although a flip side, even more prevalent now, we're seeing bands that are, they're not using photographs to promote themselves. They're using artificial intelligence. They're doing all these flyers. And what are your thoughts on that? We're heading towards a day where robots are creating album covers. And I'm talking to a guy who created some of the greatest album covers ever. What's that? Go through your mind for that.
They have to have a photograph. Somebody has to be able to take the photograph. I don't think we haven't reached a point where the band all stands there and a robot rolls up and takes their picture. I hope not. I'll be out of business. But, AI is okay. I mean, it's the end result, what it looks like. I mean, if it can help us, we just don't want it to make life worse. We want to make life better. I mean, here in L.A., they have those little robot machines with two eyes in the front, and they roll along the sidewalk all by themselves, delivering food, I guess, or prescriptions or something. And it's great to see that. It's the new age, I guess. Right.
We're chatting with Henry Diltz, one of the most famous concert photographers ever. You were the official photographer for Woodstock. What do you remember the days leading up to that, or even the hours? Were you getting a sense this was going to become a cultural milestone, an earth-shaking event?
It's funny. No, actually, quite the opposite. I got hired by Chipmunk, the lighting guy, and Michael Lang, the producer, to come out there a couple of weeks before the concert. Because they wanted, they wanted pictures of building the stage and setting up the campgrounds and all the stuff that was going on, getting everything ready. And for me, it was kind of like summer camp. My job was just to walk around that field, walk around that big stage where all the hippie carpenters were hammering and sawing and, you know, artists were making big banners, and the hog farm from New Mexico was setting up the campgrounds, and it was so much fun. And I would walk around and just document everything I saw. And then one day, a couple days before that weekend of the concert, I saw a group of people sitting up in the middle of that field of alfalfa, you know, watching them build the stage. I said, well, that's odd. What are they sitting up there for, watching these people work? Oh, I forgot. We're going to have a big concert, you know. And, of course, they expected 50,000 people, but 450,000 people showed up. So, you know, they had to make it work. Peace and love, you know, made the festival work. It was just amazing. I mean, one of the greatest events of our lifetime, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And some of your amazing photos, including Jimi Hendrix from the side stage. In your mind, who delivered the standout performance at Woodstock?
Well, you know, I mean, Crosby, Stills, Nash. I really love Stephen Stills' voice, just single voice and guitar, sailing out into the night air, you know, with 450,000 people sitting there, these huge speakers, you know, aimed out at that hillside. It was such a moment. I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, Joan Baez was great. Arlo Guthrie was great. You know, and John Sebastian, who played Saturday afternoon on acid, because he wasn't even on the bill. He came over to see all of his friends on stage, and they shoved the guitar in his hands and said, quick, get out there. The next act hasn't arrived. And he played the most beautiful set to those 450,000 people like it was his best friend he was talking to. That was great. But Jimi Hendrix was the most riveting thing on Monday morning, especially when he played the Star Spangled Banner, which was a big surprise, of course. Because that was more like, you know, their song, not our song. That was the government song. But then he kind of reclaimed it, you know. And it was a great moment, you know. Once hearing him play that and put all the sound effects of bombs and machine guns, you know, bombs bursting in the air, the rocket threat glare. I mean, he kind of reclaimed it for everybody. It was a great, great moment at Woodstock, right at the very end.
As someone who was there, are there any misconceptions about Woodstock, or are there anything that people might be surprised that you don't often hear about that you can bring a perspective to?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, the hog farm commune from New Mexico arrived a week early and to set up the grounds, and Wavy Gravy said, well, we're going to be the police now. You know, we don't need the police standing in the middle of the crowd. We're going to be the police. But we're calling it the Please Force, not the police force, the Please Force. And that, you know, that was the way it was. Everybody pitched in. Everybody shared food and water and God's herb, you know, and whatever. Everybody was friendly, and it really was peace and love. That's the way it was. But it was amazing to have all that human energy gathered in one spot like that, you know, and in a very peaceful way. I mean, other people tried it and it wasn't so peaceful.
Right.
But this one, I think Michael Lang's, kind of his humility and his wanting to just have 3 days of music and peace and love. And that's what it was great.
You mentioned Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and one of your other famous photos, their album cover, the one where they're sitting on a couch outside an old wooden house. And was that the way you designed it? Was that just a natural, they happened to be in that moment there, or how did that photo come about? Because everyone has that album and they're in their basement or their attic or somewhere.
Yeah, it's a great album cover. You know, those guys were friends of mine for years before they got together, the three of them. I met Stephen in 63. You know, and I met Graham Nash in 66. I mean, that album cover was 69. I'd known David, you know, since the early 60s at the Troubadour Club in L.A. And so then, you know, all these years later, they got together in the supergroup, and they were recording, but they didn't have any pictures even to show they were recording. So we went out one afternoon and drove around West Hollywood and found that old house with a couch in front of it. I mean, we took pictures there, but we took pictures around the corner at a clothing store. We took pictures at somebody's garage and backyard. We took a bunch of pictures that day, but But that one on the couch really stood out. And even though we weren't trying to photograph an album cover, they said this would make a great album cover. But since you took that picture a couple days ago, we've decided to call ourselves Crosby, Stills, Nash. And we're Nash, Stills, and Crosby in that picture. So I said, let's go back and we'll retake it. And, of course, the story is we went back a couple afternoons later and there was no house. You know, we pulled up where the house and the couch were supposed to be and they were gone, which was really strange. But, yeah, but that album cover is really great. My partner, Gary Burton, the graphic artist who designed it, he told the printers at the when they printed the album cover, he said, I want you to turn the paper over and print on the uncoated side of the paper. All album covers were glossy. He said, I want you to print it on the rough side of the paper without the glossy stuff.
Huh.
And they said, well, we never do that. You know, it's going to soak up the ink. And Gary said, I don't care. That's what we want. And so that album cover had an organic feel to it. It felt really good, and it looked really good instead of that glossy stuff. So that kind of changed the tenor of the way they made album covers. You know, the Doors, and they made the Doors album cover same way. They wanted that texture instead of the glossy stuff.
You did the Doors, Morrison Hotel album, and that's a famous one where they're in the window. And what was Jim Morrison like? He had a reputation, the wild child, the genius poet. Was he easy to work with? Was he a diva?
He was a wild child when he drank or took, you know, psychedelics, right? But in everyday life, he was kind of quiet. He was more like a poet, you know? He was an observer. I mean, the days I spent photographing that group, I mean, it was the other guys I talked to all the time. Jim was always there, but he was always kind of just along watching. You know, he might make a comment, but he never joined the conversation, really. Even in the van, driving downtown to shoot the Morrison Hotel and the Hard Rock Cafe, I mean, he sat there quietly. He was reading my Time magazine that I had in my back pocket. And I'm talking to Ray Manzarek and, you know, and Robbie Krieger and those guys. They're all talking away. But Jim, I don't know. It's like he was always thinking, you know. He wasn't a guy who would run up and start babbling about something. That's for sure. He was quiet and measured.
Two more I want to ask about the Eagles, the Desperado album, the one where Glenn and Don, the guys are kind of tied up, they're lassoed there. Now, we think Eagles, they had some moments where they wanted to tie each other up, I think, but whose idea was that?
So, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, their second album was Desperado, and it was a cowboy album, and their idea was, you know, that was 1974. They said if it was 1874, we probably would be young gunslingers, you know, looking for money, looking for girls, looking for excitement. That's who we probably would have been. And so they wrote that album that way. So they dressed up as cowboys and they had real guns with blank ammunition. And we went out to an old desolate movie ranch, you know, that was not used for years. And it was sitting there and they just played cowboys all day. And at the end of the day, we had a book of actual photos from the 1800s that showed various posses with the outlaws that they had killed. And they would hold them up, you know, and pose with the dead bodies or lay them out on the street in front of them. So we carefully posed that picture from a real 1800s photo of the posse standing there, which were all roadies and their producer and their manager. And then the Eagles were laid out on the street as dead bodies. And boy, they really looked dead.
Yes.
And Jackson Browne and J.D. Souther were there as well. So there were six of them laid out on the street dead. And it looked so real. Yeah, I love that picture.
Well, you sell a lot of these reproductions and then on your website, henrydiltz.com. And, I mean, everything from Paul McCartney to Deborah Harry, Janis Joplin, Mick Jagger, who's who? Is there a personal favorite of yours that maybe isn't as famous and well-known, but one that you look at and you just, it speaks to you?
Well, you mentioned that Debbie Harry. That Debbie Harry is one I love. You know, I took her picture. I didn't even know who she was. She, her group it was in L.A., and a friend, I was driving down the Sunset Boulevard with a friend. He said, hey, pull in that motel, will you? Because I got some friends here from New York. And I pulled in, they knocked on the door, and out came, you know, the group, Blondie. And I'd never met them. I'd never heard of them before. And we talked and everything. And Debbie Harry saw me with my camera, and she kind of struck a pose with her arm up and everything. And I took a picture. I love that picture. I mean, I didn't even know who she was, you know. And I love the Paul and Linda McCartney photo that I took in 71. That became a Life magazine cover. And a lot of these pictures become album covers accidentally, like Sweet Baby James Taylor. We weren't looking to shoot an album cover, just black and white publicity photos. But I took a few color photos when it looked really good so I could show them in my slideshows. And when his manager saw them, he said, oh, we want that for the cover. So the same with the CSN on the couch. That wasn't supposed to be an album cover, but so it's fun, you know, when they accidentally become that.
Do you have any advice for aspiring photographers out there or bands themselves if they're looking to do publicity photos, whether it's album cover or something for their website? What words of wisdom would you have for them ahead of time?
Well, for photographers, I mean, for years, young people would come up to me and say, I want to do what you do, you know. And I say, well, photograph your friends. You know, I mean, if you're in high school and you like photography, photograph your friends. Take candid pictures of them. Take pictures at lunch. Take pictures. And then you'll get used to photographing people. And then when you're shooting, you know, movie stars or rock and roll stars, it'll be just the same as shooting your friends, really. And then the other thing is, discover a group in a club that you really believe in and tell them, hey, look, let me take photos of you and, you know, I'll take them for free. Let me come to your rehearsal and photograph you guys. And then you'll become their photographer. And if they get famous, you'll have all these early shots. So that's another way of doing it. And if you're a musician, I don't know, find a good young photographer, you know, that you don't mind having around. I mean, you know, I was a musician on the road. We wouldn't have liked some guy with a camera clicking away in our dressing room. So you got to learn how to be polite and how to be kind of cool, you know, and just kind of don't get in anybody's face. Just do it. Be very candid about it, you know.
Earn their trust.
So that's what you want on the road with you.
Well, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Well, Henry Dilse is going to be talking about August 21st and 22nd. You're at Cindy Stock right here in the North Hills of Pittsburgh. You mentioned it supports a lot of cancer charities, and sounds like it's going to be a good time. Henry, anything else you want people to know about that event or about your particular photography and your art?
Well, you know, Cindy Stock is so great. I mean, it helps cancer survivors. Well, it helps people get cancer testing. And it helps with all kinds of things. Like if you lose your hair from chemotherapy, they'll help you get a wig, you know, and they really try to help people that have cancer, you know, work with it and support it and make their life as good as possible. And Cindy has been so great, 23 years doing this, and she's raised so much money to help people, you know, in Pittsburgh and I think all across the country. So I'm glad to be a part of that. And like I say, it's really fun hanging out those 3 days and evenings because there's such great music, great food, great fun. So I hope people will come down and hang out.
And we don't have to worry about the brown acid or anything, right? We don't have to worry about that.
No, none of that, really.
Well, I'm jealous you were in Woodstock.
I mean, they're regular folks. Yeah. It's not a field full of hippies, you know.
We're going to have a story on our website with all the details, how people can get tickets and that whole thing. So, well, we'll make sure we got that covered as
great.
Well. But, Henry, I appreciate
great
talking to you. It's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to having you back in Pittsburgh. Hope to see you soon in a couple weeks.
Okay. Yep. Hope to see you there. Scott, great
right
talking to you, man.
You too. Keep up the great work. Talk